that the other months of the year, yes, we can be forgiven, but it seems like the holy month of Ramadan has a special emphasis on it when it comes to asking for forgiveness, one, two, receiving forgiveness. So this is why it's been highly encouraged to not only ask for forgiveness in this holy month of Ramadan, but also to believe and hope that the Almighty Allah has forgiven us, keeping in mind that this should not lead us towards becoming arrogant or haughty or, you know, proud or these kind of things. We always have to be humble, even when it comes to having hope in receiving the forgiveness of the Almighty Allah. But this is the best opportunity, the holy month of Ramadan, in which we should be asking for forgiveness, and on a regular basis. It shouldn't be something that we do on and off, something that, you know, we do one day and then the rest of the 28 or 29 days we have nothing to do with seeking forgiveness. Actually, seeking forgiveness and istighfar in its various, you know, verbal forms, because you can say astaghfirullah, astaghfirullah wa atubu ilay, astaghfirullah rabbi wa atubu ilay. So in the different forms, this istighfar is incredibly important.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about istighfar and seeking forgiveness in this holy month of Ramadan in our Islamic lifestyle. Of course, you know, after so many programs on A to Z about the holy month of Ramadan, if nothing else, we have definitely learned that in the holy month of Ramadan, the things that we learn and the things that we inculcate and practice in these 29 or 30 days are things that we should try our best to continue throughout the rest of our year and our life, and thus it becomes a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So we're talking about seeking forgiveness, and you know, really it's incredibly important to seek forgiveness in this holy month because it is relatively so much more easier to be forgiven in this holy month than other holy months, right? So in the holy month of Ramadan, during these best of days and these best of nights, as the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi says, we should ask for istighfar and we should ask for the forgiveness of the Almighty Allah, and we should repent and turn back to the Almighty Allah. Now, of course, there are different forms. We don't have too much time to get into it, but very quickly, I'll try my best. You know, one is this verbal saying or repetition of the word astaghfirullah. And so this repetition of the word and realizing that astaghfirullah is this kind of a request from the Almighty Allah to be forgiven, that's one level. And the levels that come after that, of course, deal with one actually remembering the different errors or mistakes that have occurred in one's life and really actively asking for forgiveness for those things, being ashamed, being regretful. And then after that, to try one's best to not go back and commit those things. And if, God forbid, for whatever reason, we do end up committing the same sin again afterwards, to again ask for forgiveness and again never stop asking for forgiveness and never stop trying to stop sinning. Eventually, by the grace of the Almighty Allah, you will succeed. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. I so alive. life. It's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. But I'm a
in the limelight.
The World Court has unanimously ordered the Israeli regime to take all necessary and effective action to ensure basic food supplies to Gaza's Palestinian population and halt spreading famine in the enclave. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The Reuters news agency has covered the story and tells us more. The World Court on Thursday, 28th of March, unanimously ordered the Israeli regime, accused by South Africa of genocide in Gaza, to take all necessary and effective action to ensure basic food supplies to Gaza's Palestinian population and halting of spreading famine in the enclave. However, the resistance movement Hamas says a ceasefire is needed to halt the humanitarian crisis in Gaza. The order from the International Court of Justice came as the Israeli military and Palestinian resistance fighters battled in close combat around Gaza's Al-Shifa hospital, where the armed wings of the Palestinian resistance groups, Hamas and Islamic Jihad, said they attacked Israeli soldiers and tanks with rockets and mortar fire. Judges at the International Court of Justice, the World Court, said the people in the coastal enclave face worsening conditions. The World Court observes that Palestinians in Gaza are no longer facing only a risk of famine, but that famine is setting in Gaza, the judges said in their order. The new measures were requested by South Africa as part of its case that accuses the Israeli regime of state-led genocide in Gaza. Senior Hamas official Bassem Naim said the ruling did not go far enough and the Israeli regime must be ordered to end its military offensive in Gaza to halt the suffering in the enclave. We welcome any new demands to end this humanitarian tragedy in Gaza and especially in northern Gaza Strip, but we hope the court orders a ceasefire as an absolute solution to all the miseries our people in Gaza are living through, Bassem Naim told Reuters news agency. The United Nations Security Council voted on Tuesday, 26th of March, to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. The United States of America abstained from the vote, but did not veto it. Iran's Press TV has also covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says the catastrophic humanitarian situation in Gaza is man-made and has criticized the Israeli regime's lack of cooperation with the International Court of Justice regarding the facilitation of aid deliveries into the besieged Palestinian territory. The head of the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, Philip Lazzarini, made the statement in a post on X on Friday, 29th of March, after the International Court of Justice issued a legally binding order calling on the Israeli regime to ensure without delay that humanitarian aid is provided to the Gaza Strip to halt famine. The renewed binding order from the International Court of Justice is a stark reminder that the catastrophic humanitarian situation in the Gaza Strip is man-made and it's worsening. It can, however, still be reversed, according to UNRWA's head, Philip Lazzarini. Lazzarini said the order calls on the Israeli regime to cooperate with the United Nations to facilitate the delivery of urgently needed humanitarian aid to Gaza. Cooperation means that Israel must reverse its decision and allow UNRWA to reach northern Gaza with food and nutrition convoys on a daily basis and to open additional land crossings into Gaza. Reiterating that the humanitarian situation in Gaza is deteriorating, UNRWA's chief Philip Lazzarini called for more pressure on Israel to stop its months-long aggression against the Palestinian territory. The conditions of over 2 million Palestinians are worsening. Gaza is becoming an impossible place for a dignified life. In under 6 months, where people did not know hunger and were largely healthy, famine thresholds are unprecedented in time and speed. Member states should exert more pressure to implement the order by the International Court of Justice. Those who stopped funding UNRWA should reconsider their decision to allow the agency to fulfill its mandate, including help averting famine in Gaza. The United Nations and other aid agencies have warned of imminent famine due to Israel's prevention of land-based delivery of life-saving aid to the population of Gaza. Meanwhile, the spokesman for Iran's foreign ministry, Nasser Kanani, says the crimes of the Israeli regime against the Palestinians of Gaza over the past 6 months served as a yardstick for assessing the adherence of governments to human rights principles. In a post on his official X account on Friday, 29th of March, the Iranian foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani said the painful tragedy in the besieged territory has tested the commitment of countries and institutions as well as world bodies to their human, moral, legal and international responsibilities towards human rights. Nasser Kanani also commented on the reaction of those countries who claim to champion human rights to the terrible crimes that the Israeli regime is committing in Gaza, the killing and burying of two unarmed Palestinian youths in Gaza. Kanani said, "It clearly shows how sincere they are in their human rights slogans and claims." The post on X by the Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman came after a new video showed Israeli soldiers have shot dead two unarmed Palestinian men in cold blood while they were trying to return to northern Gaza Strip, their bodies buried in sand and rubbish by an Israeli army bulldozer. The disturbing incident, which was captured by long-distance cameras, shows Israeli soldiers opening fire on the two men who were walking along the Al-Rashid Street and the Al-Nablusi roundabout in Gaza City. At least one of the two men repeatedly waved what appeared to be a white flag in a sign of surrender and to show that there was no threat. In a statement on Thursday, 28th of March, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas said video footage aired by Al Jazeera television documenting the cold-blooded killing of two unarmed young civilians by Zionist occupation forces and their bodies dragged with a bulldozer to cover up the crime is further evidence of Zionist crimes in Gaza. Hamas called on the International Criminal Court, the ICC, to take urgent action to stop the systematic killing of Palestinians in Gaza. And for the sixth night in a row, thousands of Jordanians have been demonstrating near the Israeli embassy in Amman to voice their support for Palestinians of Gaza. The demonstrators gathered in front of the Israeli embassy in Amman on Friday, 29th of March, calling on the Jordanian government to cancel its highly unpopular peace treaty with Israel and end all its other agreements with the occupying Zionist regime. Protesters slammed the latest Israeli crimes in Gaza, in particular the attacks on Gaza's hospitals. They expressed their support for Palestinian resistance groups and reiterated their demand for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. They also called on the Jordanian government to cancel its peace treaty with the Israeli regime and close the regime's embassy in Jordan. Jordan signed a peace treaty with Israel in 1994 amid efforts at the time by the United States to work out a so-called two-state solution to the Palestinian conflict. Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "The Lord Most High has chosen for us certain followers, Shiites, who assist us. If we are joyful, they are joyful. And if we are sorrowful and sad, they are sorrowful and sad."
Cancer, the new trailblazers.
One of the oldest and most widespread diseases in the world, cancer has always existed and is found in all living things, including plants. It was once thought to be related to the humours, to be contagious or viral in origin. Today it is believed that the cause may be genetic. In every age, new weapons have been unsheathed against cancer, but none have succeeded in vanquishing it. And yet scientists now are able to decipher some of its most intricate processes. Could these advances have been misleading? Could they have in fact led the scientific community astray?
It now appears very likely that we got lost in the details. Our focus was wrong. We were looking at the details of the engine in the car when that wasn't really the problem.
We tend to research the details without seeing the big picture. We lose the forest for the trees.
Einstein said, for an idea that people don't think is crazy in the beginning, there is no hope.
The time has come in America when the same kind of concentrated effort that split the atom and took man to the moon should be turned toward conquering this dread disease.
It's now been over 40 years since the war against cancer was declared by one government or another.
Le cancer ne sera pas vaincu en un jour.
Today I'm announcing we are directing $30 million of that new budget.
Since then, real progress has been made. We are now able to detect, treat, and prevent cancer much better than in the past. 70% of the cancers that were fatal in the 1950s can now be cured. But such undeniable achievements are, in the end, relatively minimal. In spite of the many billions that have been invested in cancer research in the last half century, mortality rates have not decreased as much as expected. The disease continues to kill 8 million people every year. But how well do we really know this enemy? And to begin with, how do we define it?
Cancer is the dangerous overproliferation of certain cells in the body. When everything interacts in a harmonious way, the body grows. That's what happens in children or in fetal development. When cells multiply in what we call a normal way, the process is harmonious and coordinated. But when the cell proliferation does not respect this process and gets out of line, so to speak, that's what we call cancer.
We have to remember what cancer is. Cancer is a kind of traitorous cell in your own body, and that's one of the things that makes it so diabolical, so difficult to treat. It's your own flesh and blood that has become immortal. The cancer cell is an immortal cell. People don't realize this, but all of our cells are destined to die, and it's actually the death of the cell that's healthy. Our cells regenerate it through death. They're constantly growing. But if a cell stays alive and keeps growing, that is what cancer is.
Where does this paradoxical explosion of life that is cancer come from? How can it be prevented and controlled? Surgery was first used to treat cancer in the 19th century, and then, at the beginning of the 20th century, radiation therapy was developed. Both methods target the tumor, which is a cluster of cancer cells that form in an organ. But these methods do not prevent some of the cells from escaping and spreading to other organs. The resulting secondary tumors, called metastases, are often highly malignant. In order to stop this fatal process, a new weapon was developed in the 1950s. On December 2, 1943, German warplanes bombed the town of Bari in Italy. One of the ships in the harbour exploded. It was carrying 2,000 bombs of mustard gas, a highly toxic poison gas. Over the next few months, more than 1,000 people died, both soldiers as well as civilians. The doctors who treated the victims poisoned by the gas noticed that they had very few white blood cells in their blood. This incident led researchers to come up with a new idea. If mustard gas could kill blood cells, why not use similar toxic chemicals to eliminate cancer cells? That was the beginning of chemotherapy. A few years later, it was being used effectively against previously incurable cancers. However, chemotherapy hits hard and indiscriminately. It kills diseased cells as well as healthy cells. It is a scorched earth strategy applied to the entire organism that is extremely harsh on the body. Its side effects range from nausea to hair loss, to anemia and other immune system disorders. Moreover, while some cancers respond to it, others resist it, for reasons that we're still unable to explain.
The idea of using chemotherapy against cancer was purely pragmatic. We don't know why a particular tumor responds specifically to such and such an agent. However, what we suspected was that chemotherapy acted and could be especially effective on rapidly proliferating cells. That's why pediatric tumors were good targets. But unfortunately, this explanation turns out to be insufficient. So we have made advances, but we do not necessarily understand why we made those advances.
While cancer treatment has progressed significantly, many gray areas remain with regard to the disease itself. In the 1970s, it was thought that the mystery had finally been pierced. Two researchers, Harold Varmus and Michael Bishop, demonstrated for the first time that the enemy might come from within their own cells. It could even be lurking in our genes. For this discovery, they were awarded the Nobel Prize. In order to understand this, we must return to the basic principles of the science of genetics. They postulate that DNA controls everything in our bodies. Cancer occurs when something disrupts the codes that regulate the way everything functions in the body. A gene that is damaged, broken, or undergoes mutation may cause cells to deviate from their genetic programming.
When certain cells start to go out of control, which is the case with cancer, they are no longer following their genetic programming. What happens in this process, which is called mutation, is that the cells change their own DNA. So the DNA is altered, the control mechanism is impaired, and as a result, they escape genetic regulation. That's what is now called the genetic theory, or the mutational theory of cancer, which states that cancer is caused by mutations that occur in cancer cells.
A new era is dawning. Researchers began using new techniques to hunt for oncogenes, those genes whose mutations are the cause of cancer. Robert Weinberg is an iconic figure in the field of cancer genetics. Following in the footsteps of Varmus and Bishop, his work has helped to greatly elucidate the biological factors at work in the development of cancer.
In 1978, we began an experimental procedure that allowed us to demonstrate a year later that, in fact, if one looks into the DNA of cancer cells, one can find their damaged genetic information that is responsible for driving the unconfined, the unconstrained proliferation of human cancer cells. The DNA that we looked at there turned out to be a cancer-causing gene, which is called an oncogene. The oncogene is a damaged form of a gene that resides in normal human DNA, and under the influence of the chemical carcinogen, this gene is mutated. It's altered so that its altered sequence information now creates an oncogene that persuades the cell to grow without limit, without any confinement, and to grow and form thousands, millions, billions of descendants.
Vast amounts of human and financial resources have thus been poured into the area of oncogene research. Billions are being invested in equipment and technology. The human genome is being mapped, and we will soon know everything there is to know, not only about cancer, but about many other diseases as well. The genetic approach now stands out as the one and only path.
I do think that there is by now a commitment to genetics. There is a commitment in our National Institutes of Health. How could there not be? Our director is a geneticist. We have by now an enormous infrastructure of biotech companies built over the last 50 years to work with laboratory scientists to study the genetics of this and the genetics of that.
Today, we have dozens of countries across the world really involved in the race to actually sequence cancer genomes, find cancer genomes. So the science of cancer is really progressed very quickly because we now understand genetics and genomes and we can actually catalog mutations.
Canadian scientist Thomas Hudson runs a large international consortium that is in the process of completing the sequencing of 25,000 tumors.
Our ability to not just discover cancer genes, but rapidly understanding the biology of the cancer genes, and try to make drugs for the most important ones, is actually becoming almost routine.
When I was studying the rise of oncogene research, it was a new bright star, right? It was a hope. People really thought that we were getting to the cause, the basic causes of cancer, and that it would eventually lead to solutions, to treatments.
In the late 1990s, drugs designed to target and affect the behavior of cancer-causing genes were developed. Next to chemotherapy, these so-called targeted treatments appear to be considerably less destructive. Their impact on the body is gentler, with fewer side effects. The pharmaceutical industry has invested massively in these new therapies, which represent more than half of the anti-cancer drugs now being developed. 200 products are already on the market, and 900 are in preparation.
There are a lot of advances happening in oncology today because of targeted therapies. And we know that some, like Gleevec, actually have a long response. But the disappointment is many of the new targeted therapies don't last as long. And so there's limitations in terms of their effectiveness for patients. It could be, 3 months, a year. But very often the disease comes back and can overcome that resistance.
Drugs such as Gleevec and Herceptin have without question contributed to advances in the treatment of certain leukemias and breast cancers. But for almost all of the other cancers, the results have been disappointing.
In principle and logically, targeted therapy is much more promising. The unfortunate outcome, however, is that targeted therapy often works brilliantly, but after 6 or 7 or 8 months, the cancer cells figure out a new way to start proliferating, and these newly formed cancer cells are no longer affected by the initially introduced drug.
It means that we would become caught up in a never-ending chain of events without ever really arriving at a cure. That, I think, is one of the limitations of targeted therapies.
Why is it taking so long for the genetic revolution to come up with effective treatments? It is now estimated that over 2,000 genes might be involved in various cancers, and that the mutation rate could be 1,000 times higher depending on the tumor. And the further we probe, the more complicated it gets.
The major challenge that we have is to understanding what the data means. I was part of the Human Genome Project during the 1990s, and we sequenced that whole genome. It took 10 years, and we still don't understand most of the genes and the proteins and what the genomes do. So we still, our ability to do an interpretation of one genome, a whole community of scientists across the world is still challenged. It's how difficult it is.
The information, the technology for analyzing cancer cells is now so powerful that we are being inundated, we are being flooded with large amounts of information that vastly exceed our capabilities of digesting the information and understanding its implications. Clearly, without understanding what makes cancer cells grow abnormally, our hands are tied in terms of being able to create new kinds of therapies.
There are people who cynically would say, if you have a hammer, every problem is a nail. Cancer genes are now the nails. Because we have molecular genetic tools, we can go and hammer on cancer genes. So the question of, is this the best way to study cancer? Was it the best way? It was, in a certain sense, the best way given the tools that people had. Was it the solution to the problem of cancer?
In the early 1990s, patient advocacy groups were formed in protest against this fixation on genetics. They criticized its lack of therapeutic results. The organization Breast Cancer Action was founded in San Francisco in order to get cancer research out of its rut by challenging, first of all, its dogmatic focus on genetics. Yes, inherited gene mutations may increase the risk of cancer, but only in 5 to 10% of the cases.
When I was diagnosed, that there was a way in which the doctor just wanted to take what he had in front of him. That's to say, you know, a 36-year-old person with this stage breast cancer, and therefore they need this treatment, and throw me into the numbers.
I even had a really smart doctor say, well, you don't have a family history. And they said, you can't have breast cancer. And I, oh, okay. And I nodded along, but I did have breast cancer, and I was, you know, had done all those things you're supposed to do. And I felt like it was a revolution for me to find out the things I found out.
Inheriting a gene does not mean that you will get breast cancer. And we really do have to look at the inherited gene and environment interactions and why for some people it leads to cancer and for some people it doesn't.
But I think in the last 10 or 15 years, there's been so much concentration on genetics. And I see it in other diseases where they've accounted for the incidence of these various diseases because of genes that they've identified that people have in common. I don't know how that affects breast cancer, but I know that in general that this investment that genetics explains everything has kind of put things off track.
Could the scientific community have been on the wrong track for the last 30 years? Have we in fact come to a dead end?
By looking at these details, it looks as if we lost the forest for the trees, as Americans would say. And the holistic view became less prominent.
Back in the 1970s, research by American biologist Mina Bissell tended to prove that cancer arises from an interaction between certain cells and their environment. She was one of the first scientists to challenge the genetic theory of cancer.
When you take these cells from the person and put it in a dish, or from an animal and put it in the dish, the genes are not fixed. They are regulated by context. They are regulated by microenvironment. So that just clarified a lot of things for me, that, again, context or microenvironment. And in this case, the architecture of the tissue was very, very important. And once you destroyed the architecture, that, in combination with the oncogene, could make a tumor.
But at the time, the budding sphere of genetics was monopolizing all of the attention, and Mina Bissell's work was virtually ignored.
People
say Mina is a pioneer. They say she's a visionary. Some people say. Some people think I'm crazy still. But no, I didn't think as a... I never thought. I just was curious. We published the papers in very many good journals, and the reactions basically were disbelief, or nobody paid attention. People would not quote them. They would not say this. It's only in the last 10 years or so that a lot of very well-known people are aware of the work, and they quote it, and they also say it's pretty obvious.
In order to understand cancer, do we need to change our focus? Should we examine cells in interaction with their environment? Consider how they breathe, eat, and develop? Observe them like we would observe an animal or a plant living within an ecosystem.
In a forest, if there's a plant or an animal species that proliferates to the point of destroying the ecosystem, that is literally the equivalent of cancer in the body. Rather than seeing the body as something that functions under the centralized control of our DNA, if we see it as a self-regulating system, like a forest or an ocean, we will then start to look at how the element that is proliferating gets access to nutritional resources and will study the predators. So, for example, if a certain type of rabbit suddenly begins to multiply to the point of destroying the forest, we're not going to say, oh, the rabbit has mutated. We would wonder instead if carrots hadn't become more abundant for some reason, or if some of the other species that would normally compete with the rabbits hadn't disappeared. Or whether the foxes that kept a check on the rabbit population hadn't some kind of problem that year. And so all of a sudden, instead of looking for mutations, you're faced with a more global vision of balances and imbalances.
Iqra bismi rabbika alladhi khalaq.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا
قد عودك ربي بقرآنك.
Let's recite the Quran.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajahum.
Assalamu alaikum. Ramadan Kareem, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners all over the world listening to IRB English Radio right now. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem in the holy month of Ramadan. It's really, really emphasized, and it's also very valuable, okay, to recite the Quran Kareem more than before in the holy month of Ramadan. Yes, we really welcome you all, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, to our Quranic session. Inshallah, today we will talk about some of the verses from Surah Al-A'raf, Ayah 65, 66, 67, and 68. These four verses from Surah Al-A'raf on page
158.
So, brothers and sisters, dear listeners, turn to page 158, Ayah 65, 66, 67, and, 68. So, we'll practice these verses, but first, if you agree, we listen to a recitation. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yep. Let's listen to a recitation.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم وإلى عاد أخاهم هودا قال يا قوم اعبدوا الله ما لكم من إله غيره أفلا تتقون قال الملأ الذين كفروا من قومه إنا لنراك في سفاهة وإنا لنظنك من الكاذبين قال يا قوم ليس بي سفاهة ولكني رسول من رب العالمين أبلغكم رسالات ربي وأنا لكم ناصح أمين
Nice recitation. So, in the previous verses, we were talking about Prophet Nuh alayhi salam. Right? You remember I told you Allah Almighty wants to talk about prophethood in the next verses?
Yeah.
Yeah. From ayah 58, ayah 59. لَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا نُوحًا Allah Almighty talked about the prophetic mission of Prophet Nuh alayhi salam. Now, in these verses, Allah Almighty wants to talk about the prophethood of Prophet Hud alayhi salam. All right?
Yes.
So, Allah Almighty says, وَإِلَىٰ عَادٍ And to the people of Ad. Ad was the nation, the people of Prophet Nuh, Hud alayhi salam. أَخَاهُمْ هُودًا لَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا نُوحًا إِلَىٰ قَوْمِهِ وَإِلَىٰ عَادٍ أَرْسَلْنَا أَخَاهُمْ نُوحًا Alright? It's like this. I mean, the meaning is this way, that we sent Prophet Nuh أخاهم Allah Almighty wants to say that yeah, we chose Prophet from among themselves who was a person who knew best his people okay?
Yes.
Who knew best his people so Allah Almighty sent Prophet Hud alayhi salam to them قال يا قوم اعبدوا الله the same as Prophet Nuh alayhi salam he is embracing the religion of God inviting people to worship
Allah
Almighty اعبدوا الله He said, O my people, worship Allah. مَا لَكُم مِّنْ إِلَهٍ غَيْرُهُ You have no other God besides Him. أَفَلَا تَتَّقُونَ Will you not then be wary of Him? قَالَ الْمَلَأُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا مِّنْ قَوْمِهِ The elite of His people who are faithless. The same as the people who stopped Prophet Nuh alayhi salam, who stood up against Prophet Nuh alayhi salam.
Yes.
So the people mala', the elite, the elders, or we can say the influencers of the qawm, the nation, they stood up against Prophet Hud alayhi salam. They said, Inna lanaraka fi safaha wa inna lanadhunnuka min al-kadhibin. The people of Prophet Nuh alayhi salam were much respectful than these people. Look, they said, "Inna lanaraka fi dhalalin mubin." All right, we see you in manifest error. We see you are wrong. You're going the wrong way. Look, the people said you're going the wrong way. But these people, they insulted their prophet. They said, "What? Inna lanaraka fi safaha." Indeed, we see you to be illiterate. Safi. Somebody who is not mature. وَإِنَّا لَنَظُنُّكَ مِنَ الْكَاذِبِينَ And indeed we consider you to be a liar. They fabricated lie to their prophet. So this shows that they were really disrespectful people. قَالَ يَا قَوْمِ Again look at the prophet. Prophet never gets angry. They insult the prophet. But prophet shows Mercy and kindness. قَالَ يَا قَوْمِ لَيْسَ بِي سَفَاهَةٌ He said, O my people, I'm not in folly. I'm not what you call me, you're immature. وَلَكِنِّي رَسُولٌ مِّن رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ Rather, I am an apostle from the Lord of all the worlds. I communicate, I deliver. أُبَلِّغُكُمْ رِسَالَاتِ رَبِّي وَأَنْصَحُ لَكُمْ وَأَنَا لَكُمْ نَاصِحٌ أَمِينَ And I am a trustworthy and well-wisher for you. So, this is what Prophet Nuh alayhi salam said to his people. Refer to the Tafasir books, inshallah, to learn more We can't explain more than this. Since we are running out of time, we have to mention the tajweed points and practice the recitation. So, brothers and sisters, time to pay attention to some tajweed points. Hussein, وَإِلَىٰ عَادٍ أَخَاهُمْ هُودًا. هُودًا. I made a pause. وَإِلَىٰ عَادٍ أَخَاهُمْ هُودًا. Is that correct if I make a pause and read it this way?
No.
What? Why?
Because it should be Huda.
Huda. The Tanween Fatha changes to?
Alif
Mad. Alif Mad. In case you stop.
Stop, yes.
One question. Hassan, can I make a pause here? Hmm? There is a stopping sign, I think.
Yes.
Sila. What does that say?
It says that it's better to stop.
Better to stop.
Yes.
So, I did it well then.
Yes.
Okay. وَإِلَىٰ عَادٍ أَخَاهُمْ هُودًا. What if I continue, Hassan? Listen. وَإِلَىٰ عَادٍ أَخَاهُمْ هُودًا قَالَ يَا قَوْمِ اعْبُدُوا اللَّهَ مَا لَكُمْ مِنْ إِلَٰهٍ غَيْرُهُ. What if I continue?
Yes, you can continue.
So Qila tells me?
It's better to stop.
Better to stop and?
Can continue.
Still? You can continue. Good job. Thank you. And what about that jim? Little jim there.
Jim allows you to stop.
Jim says, you're allowed to make a pause here. Don't worry. Okay. Stop here. There is a bus station for you. Okay. أَفَلَا تَتَّقُونَ. So there is no important point because in the previous session we mentioned all the important points. They are the same. مَا لَكُمْ Extend the sound. And yes, the غَيْرُهُ, if you connect it to أَفَلَا تَتَّقُونَ, make sure you stretch the sound of هُو. And that's all.
قرآني في قلبي دوما يغمرني من فيض ضياء آيات
IRIB English Radio, in cooperation with Xavier International Schools, presents Let's Recite the Quran.
قال الملأ الذين كفروا من قومه Min qawmihi. Ali Nasir, tell us about this.
Yes, we have ikhfa.
Ikhfa. How do you do that?
We should hide the sound of noon. Yes.
How do you do that?
Min qawmihi.
Make sure you do not read it min qawmihi. Do not pronounce the noon correctly, yeah?
Yes.
So, min qawmihi. Inna. You can extend since the mud is jais.
Yes.
لنراك في سفاهة حسين في سفاهة و
في سفاهة
في سفاهة وإنا لنظنك من الكاذبين قال يا قومي ليس بي سفاهة again the same as سفاهة
yes.
ولكني رسول من رب مر رسول من رب العالمين The rule?
إضغام
إضغام You merge them, you join them أبلغكم رسالات ربي وأنا لكم ناصح أمين أنا لكم The last point and yeah That will be all أنا Do you see on the top of a leaf you have a circle? The letter O in English, like the letter O in English you have there. So what does that say, that sign? Huh? Anybody remember? In Tajweed class we learned this.
We shouldn't pronounce the sound of Alif.
Mm-hmm.
We should skip the Alif.
What is the sound of Alif?
Ah.
The sound is stretching. Yeah. Ah,
stretching.
So I say, you mean we don't have to read it, we should skip the letter Alif.
Yeah, we will join the noon to the next letter. Or we don't stretch it.
Oh, good. Wa ana.
Yeah.
Na. Na. Wa ana. Not na. Hasan? Wa ana lankum. أنا لكم not وأنا لكم. So yes. Why أنا لكم has a, another meaning. Yes. When you say أنا لكم has another meaning. So أنا, can I, is there any case that you can read the aleph?
When you stop.
So it says when you stop, read the aleph. أبلغكم رسالات ربي وأنا لكم. So if you stop, read the aleph. This tiny O says, when you stop, read the aleph. When you continue reading, huh?
You skip
the aleph. That's it. So I will recite these four verses one by one. Make sure, inshallah, you repeat after me. Let's have a very nice recitation all together. Brothers and sisters, dear listeners, get ready. Ready, everyone? Huh?
Yes.
Let's go. A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
وإلى عاد أخاهم هودا
وإلى عاد أخاهم هودا
قال يا قوم اعبدوا الله ما لكم من إله غيره
قال يا قوم اعبدوا الله ما لكم من إله غيره
أفلا تتقون
أفلا تتقون
قال الملأ الذين كفروا من قومه إنا لنراك في سفاهة
قال الملأ الذين كفروا من قومه إنا لنراك في سفاهة
إنا لنراك في سفاهة وإنا لنظنك من الكاذبين
إنا لنراك في سفاهة وإنا لنظنك من الكاذبين
قال يا قوم ليس بي سفاهة ولكني رسول من رب العالمين
قال يا قوم ليس بي سفاهة ولكني رسول من رب العالمين
أبلغكم رسالات ربي وأنا لكم ناصح أمين
أبلغكم رسالات ربي وأنا لكم ناصح أمين
صدق الله العلي العظيم
صدق الله العلي العظيم
أحسنتم ما شاء الله. Thank you so much. Brothers and sisters, thank you for being with us till the end of this session. That's all from us for today. Ramadan Kareem. May Allah bless you all, inshallah. Brothers Hassan, Hussein, and Ali Nasir, thanks for being with us. Thanks to IRIB English Radio. Thanks to Xavier International Schools Network for cooperations. See you then in the next session. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Sayyidina Muhammadi wa alihi al-tahirin.
Allahumma صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's Recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Sajjad, peace be upon him, has said, "Whenever I remember the martyrdom of the children of Fatima, peace be upon her, my eyes filled with tears."
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: some 80 Palestinians are killed during IOF attacks on day 177 of the U.S.-Israeli genocidal war on the Gaza